Thank you. It's nice to be with you this evening, and I hope to show you shortly some of the photographs that we've described, some of the work that we've done just recently with brass tacks. I've only been doing this for about a year and a half. Before that, I was on the board of brass tacks, but Colin Rees, who's a very difficult act to follow because he's a man of great experience in many ways, he was retiring, and so I took over, and so very glad to have my charming secretary Sheila, and we worked together in the office, and we've learned a lot in the first year and a half, and I hope to show you some of the projects we've been involved in. But I want to read the scriptures with you, please, in the book of Titus, and we'll start to read in Titus chapter 1, verse 1. Paul, a servant of God and an apostle of Jesus Christ, according to the faith of God's elect and the acknowledging of the truth which is after godliness, in hope of eternal life, which God, that cannot lie, promised before the world began. Now just drop your eyes down, please. And verse 10, for there are many unruly and vain talkers and deceivers, especially they of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole houses, teaching things which they ought not for filthy lucre's sake. One of themselves, even a prophet of their own, said, the Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, slow bellies, always a gluttons. Chapter 2, verse 7, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity. And shall we just go to the last verse of chapter 3, second last verse. Let us also learn to maintain good works for necessary uses, that they be not unfruitful. And just the Lord will speak us through this reading from His precious word. You'll understand, just for the sake of time, I'm skipping over and just picking out a few verses. And really, we're going to be thinking tonight in those verses about the challenge of the work of mission. I think Titus was left with a very, what we might say, a short straw, being left in Crete, when you think about the kind of audience that he had to work with, the building blocks of this New Testament church in the island of Crete, and he's been left to appoint elders, and he's got a pretty poor bunch of people to choose from if we read these verses and understand some of the underlying culture of the island. And yet we are challenged by the fact that the gospel changed people's lives. And you know, we read about the fact that the acknowledging of the truth which brings godliness. And Titus's challenge would be to teach the scriptures, with the result that they would result in godly behavior. And I've been thinking a lot about the subject of redemption recently, so I suppose that's at the back of what I'm thinking about just now. But you understand that Titus is being told that this godly behavior, he has to be a pattern of good works. In other words, it's not something you're going to preach about all the time, it's something you're going to live out. And one of the ways in which you can live out is by being involved in righteous works for sure, but also good works, because we know that good works speak volumes. I was involved in a project recently in the south of Ireland, and we were out in all kinds of weather, snow, sleet, and sun, and so on. And people passing by started to ask the question, who are these people? Now, all we were doing was building a dry stained deck, but the fact was that they saw what we were doing, they saw how we were doing it, and how long we were doing it, and it seemed to sort of say something to them, these are not council workmen. If you are a council workman, I don't mean any sort of, I'm sure you're a different kind of council workman. So see as he digs a bigger hole. But here's Titus, you know, and he's being told that this is the building blocks you've got. But just think about the message that you have. It's a message which changes lives. But also it's a message which changes your life, and people are going to be watching you and what you do. And as we come to the last verse there, you know, he says that, tell the people that they should maintain good works. You know, the subject of good works goes right through the three chapters of this book, where he's reminding about the fact that the gospel results in changed behavior. And if it can't change a preacher, then it most certainly is not going to change the audience either. To be involved in good works for urgent needs. Now, I'm using this as a launching pad to try and introduce the work that we do as Brass Tacks. Brass Tacks stands for British Assemblies Tactical Support. That's, you know, I was on the board for 2 years and I didn't even know what Brass Tacks stood for. So if you didn't know that, then you've got a great excuse. British Assemblies Tactical Support, it's been running for 26 years, and it really started by saying, is there not something that people could do from this side of the globe if they have practical skills to try and help other people who are involved in mission in other countries who don't have those skills? Now, we don't take every project that comes across our books, because we have no end of people wanting help, wanting builders and so on. But what we do is we look at the strategy and we say, well, in what sense does this project benefit the gospel of Jesus Christ? In what sense can it be used to enhance the facility and help people to do that bit better what they are already doing? And so, very much with that focus in mind, we look at the projects. Unfortunately, I'm not the final say in all these things, although I would make recommendations to the trustees. But we have a project selection committee. We discuss the projects and then we approve them. And last year, we're very grateful for this. We finished 8 projects. And so far this year, we have done, we're about 4. So we're doing okay in terms of the number of projects. And always, if we can put the lights out now, please. Always, we're glad to learn of more volunteers. I'm going to stand out the way so that you can see the picture okay. I'm going to start off with taking you to India, when I was just recently. And that kind of project was more consulting. We didn't stick a spade in the ground. We looked at drawings, we looked at terrain, and we advised. And that's pretty much what we did to try and, you know, there's plenty of labour in India. We didn't need to have volunteers from there, but we did need some expertise, and we tried to help with that. And the first place we went to, we arrived at Bangalore, and I was with Paul Dodds, who is our full-time worker from Cardiff, and his wife Angie. They worked for many years in India, and so they know the area where we were going to visit. And we've been asked by a man called Ron Penny. Now, I think maybe some of you will have prayed for Ron and Lilo Penny, and they have been living in Bangalore for many years, and he took us to this girls' home where he has been involved as a board member. Now, you're looking here at the secondary school which is on the mission ground, and this is for Canada speaking people, and it's up for 10 years, and I was really interested because there wasn't a single crack in the plasterwork after 10 years. This school would be attended by Hindus and Christians, as well as you know, anybody can go along to the school there as long as they're Canada speaking. And it's a huge plot of 15 acres, and what we've been asked to do was to advise upon a new school for English speaking children. And just behind where I was standing to take that photograph, that was morning assembly out in the open, just behind where I was is the original school, which was set up by this lady, Florence Bird. Now, I was interested to read about her and the fact that she went out there in 1890 or thereabouts as a young girl, 22 years old, and she set up a home for girls. There was a famine at the time in North India, and she went up and she rescued 150 girls and brought them down to that area in the south of India, mid to south India, and set up this girls' home, and it's been running ever since. 50 girls died on the way south, and because of the poor health they were in. But she managed to negotiate with some British gold prospectors, and they sold her the ground for a pittance, because they hadn't managed to find any gold. And underneath the ground there's a whole lot of black granite, which Ron is thinking about maybe there's money in the ground, but there we go, that's another story. But you know, so these ladies have all served their time at Collegial Girls' Home, that's Florence Bird there. This is the old mission house where I was living or staying at nights. The mosquitoes have a special appointment at 5 o'clock. They all start pouring in every kind of orifice they can find. So you have to sleep under a net and so on. But it's like a lot of these old mission houses, they're all pretty much the same kind of structure. This is the English-speaking pupils, and they have the sort of old buildings, and that's why they want us to advise on building a new school. Ron has a sum of money which has been left in a legacy. It won't meet the whole cost, but it certainly will go a long way to paying for the contractor. So we were negotiating prices, we were negotiating you know, different designs for the price that he was prepared to pay, and so on. The children have two uniforms. They have the white one for some days, and they have a foreign coloured one for other days. And they love this during the morning drill. They have people who've never learned bugle in their life, but they do call the bugle, and it's quite an amazing sound. And here they have the children in the classroom. So we were busy measuring classroom sizes, because we figured, well, if you're going to build a new school, you can't end up with smaller classrooms, otherwise they're going to be a rumpus. You can't end up with a smaller staff room, otherwise there's going to be complaints. So we were just looking at what facilities they had and trying to figure how many children we could fit into the room. The density of children in that school is much less than it would be in some of the state schools. In fact, the government inspector said that the school there, the Canada-speaking school, is one of the best ones in Karnataka area of India, which is quite interesting. This is not just some sort of racehorse thing. This is actually the caste system, and they actually have to have so many of each caste in the school to demonstrate that they're being fair and giving education to people across the caste. That's a sign from the English Medium School. This is Ron Penny with some of the girls who are in the hostel. Now, these girls are taken from homes where perhaps they've been physically or sexually abused, and they are given a place in the home. I think there's about 50 or 60 of them, and then they go home, some at the weekends and some at the end of term. But they're given a very good Christian influence in their lives. And just as I was leaving that area in Collegial, having finished looking at the design and so on, it's going to be almost the same as Canada's between school, upstairs, downstairs, with about 12 classrooms. And this is the silk. They're trying to resurrect the silkworm industry. And you know, there are so many photographs I took of this silk process, but this is the little worms inside there, and the farmers bring them in on baskets on the back of their bicycles and sell them by the kilo. And then they catch the silk out of the middle, and then they spin that, and then they get about, I think it's about 300 meters of silk from one worm, so it's well worth feeding the worms. Now, that was one job. Then we went up to Hebron, which is about 3.5 hours by taxi up into the mountains, and a place called Ooty. And how many people can you carry on your motorbike? Well, here's two calves plus a passenger on the back of this motorbike. And this was a sand truck on the way, so it's quite an interesting taxi drive for just the sake of seeing some of the sights of the mountains in India. That's the vegetable. Look at the cauliflowers, they're like footballs. And so everywhere we went in the market, they wanted us to try their pea pods. So we had pockets bulging with pea pods. That's the temple. They had a lot of these Hindu temples around. And this was built by a Scotsman, you'd never guess. He was the first man to set up anything in Ooty, and he worked for the military. He was sent to round up some rebels, and he liked it so well, he decided to ask permission to have his garrison there, and he built that house, and it looks just like it would be in any kind of Scottish ground, doesn't it? You know? So it's now the College for Arts or something in Ooty, that's the village. This is the church where the cricketer C.T. Studd preached for 10 years. Interesting church. This was a temple, and people have come and studied the people who built this temple. There's just a few of them. They're called the Todas, and some of them have said they're a lost tribe of Israel, but you see, I hear that a lot. But that's what they do. They make these rugs and sell them. Different facial structure from the other Indians that we met when we were there. Anyways, what we were there for was quite a significant issue in that there's been poor monsoons for the last 3 years, and the school, this is Hebron School, which have about 350 pupils, they don't have enough water. So now they're having to buy in water. And you know, there are rules like you only have a shower, it's a boarding school, so you're only allowed a shower for 3 minutes. And there's somebody who sits outside the door of the showers timing you. And so whether you've got long hair, short hair or no hair, you stay in 3 minutes, everybody. All the water has to be collected from washhand basins, etc. And so they were saying, well, what can we do? It's becoming expensive to run this school. So we had a look at the area, we surveyed the area. And this is Gregor Ferry, and he was only out there. That's Peter Ferry's grandson, I think perhaps some of you know him. And he had just been out there 3 weeks, and I thought it was a good opportunity to meet up with Gregor. And he's having a ball, he's really enjoying himself and keeping very well. There's a lady with a load on her head. Now, we were surveying this area to try and see how could we improve the water supply to the area. And what we noticed was that there were several things that just needed, looked at. For example, a whole area of succulent weeds with damp ground, but none of that dampness was getting into the wells, you know, that kind of thing. Disconnected water collecting systems and so on. So it wasn't really rocket science. There was a whole lot of stuff that can be done. So we wrote a report and gave it to the school, who I think are going to implement some of what we have said to them to improve their water situation. It really is quite serious, because they have to buy, you know, a truckload of water every day for all those pupils, for the cooking and for the washing and so on. This is a wedding that we were at. We were asked to go as guests for this couple's wedding. And that was some of the guests. So it was an interesting trip to India. Now I'm taking you to another part of the world, to Ireland, which this was a request. Noel McMeekin's son, called Gareth, has been involved in this project, which is like a camp centre. And he said, well, look, would there be any way that you could perhaps come and help us? We have 200 metres of dry stone dike wall. I was keen to go just because I wanted to learn a bit about dry stone diking myself. And so we had a great time. We had a team of about six people in the end, and this is where it is. It's not far from Dublin, about an hour and a half drive from Dublin, and it's a centre that they bought over just 2 or 3 years ago, and they've been using it for youth camps and for, you know, weekends away for various church groups. So it's got quite an interesting sense of mission about what they're doing. And again, it was just demolishing the old structure, which had been eaten up with ivy, crawled all the way through the bricks and things like that. So some of it had to be demolished completely and rebuilt. And of course, the weather was absolutely horrendous sometimes. And so we had a great time. I think after 4 days, my waterproofs gave out, at which point everything was wet. But the fifth day, we managed to finish everything. That guy there, that's Murray Laurie here from Arbroath. This is Tom Stirrett, who is with us as well. This man here, he came to help us. He was a proper stonemason, so he showed us what we should be doing, which was a very helpful thing. But we ended up with a This is Phil Kennedy from Northern Ireland. He was helping us. He's a builder and so on. So that was the end of the project. And then we had to put this wall into place, which was precast. Gareth wanted to buy a precast wall, and it was very, very heavy, horrendously heavy. And then it had to be bedded in with these upright pillars that you can see being lowered, going down, which was a ton or more at a time. So it was quite heavy work, but we finished everything we set out to do. And of course, like any kind of mechanical things, we blew a hydraulic hose, so that was us looking all slick and trying to replace the hydraulic hose and lying about in the hydraulic oil. That was some of the team there as we left on the Saturday to come back. Now, this is a project that we're in the middle of just now, and it's called Wakwashi School. Wakwashi was a new thing for us, because normally our way of working is we have worked with missionaries who have funds. And so what would happen is, if they don't have all the funds, we would do the work in sections. But this particular group, where there's no missionaries involved in it, is a Zambian couple who came to us and said, "We'd like to build a school." And I said, "Well, how much money do you have?" They said, "None." I said, "Well, it's not going to be a very big school, is it?" They said, "Well, it's for children with special needs." And so I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, you pray about it and we'll pray about it." And we ran a special flyer in the magazine, and somebody sent us £1,000 towards it. Now, we don't normally get involved in fundraising for buildings, as we kind of have kept out of that. But somebody sent us some money, somebody else sent us some money, and then I got a phone call in the office, and this man said, I represent, you know, a trust, and we're having a meeting. How much will this building cost?" So I did my calcs, and I said, "Well," and they contributed, and actually, according to the amount of money I figured that we would need for this building, you know, we had almost the whole thing paid before we even started any work. And that was just a different way of working, because normally it would be missionaries who are stumping up the funds. So the way Joyce and Henry have been working in the past, they have been trying to train parents on how to look after children with special needs. And Henry makes these paper mache supports. So it might be like a Zimmer kind of thing, or it might be a high chair kind of thing. But he has a little workshop, and he gets all the cardboard boxes he can, and he makes a frame, and then covers it with paper mache, and he has spacers and all that sort of stuff to make the three-dimensional effect, and then he has it painted. So it's quite interesting. They take some children up to Mambirima in the minibus. Now, I was just imagining having like 12 children in a minibus going over that road to Mambirima. They're quite horrendous. And I said, "Well, what about stopping, you know, for the toilet and all that thing?" He said, "Easy, we don't give them anything to eat or drink before we go." I said, "Once we're over the bad bit, then we can give them eat food and drink, and then they can go to the toilet." So anyway, so these are the children that were left in Kitwe with. A lot of these teachers were volunteers, and you know, they helped Joyce and Henry. That's Joyce, and that's Henry. So we've started the work. I pegged out the foundations just in August, September, just as I was leaving. And they've now dug the foundations, we've poured the footings. And because there were no volunteers forthcoming for this project, what we've done is we've actually employed local people, which works. I mean, because that kind of work is sort of, you know, it takes a while to dig the foundations. If I hired a digger, maybe pay £300-400 for the hire of a digger, but I can use the £400 and give it to these guys, and it helps their families. Now, these people who are, two of them anyway, who are working there, are folks that worked with us when we were out in Zambia, so it was giving them an income. So Henry has showed a lot of initiative. He got this machine manufactured locally. It's a brick-making machine which makes concrete breeze blocks, and several at a time, as you can see. And this is them producing their blocks. Unfortunately, he started off and he did this building, and this is a shower and a toilet block, which has eaten into some of the funds, but that's another story. And so what we're hoping to do is go and get involved in that this year. We have the drawings that have been submitted for planning, and we're hoping that if we can get the floor slab on by, say, July, June, July time, we've got some volunteers going out around that time, then hopefully the work will progress from there. So again, using local people, if volunteers are not forthcoming or they're not absolutely necessary and there's local people who are well skilled to do it, then why not? So this is another project, and this was done by the Howdens, Brian and Debbie Howden, who have this old typical mission house in Angola, and some of it was cracking, and the foundations were crumbling, and the walls were cracking, and so on. So Mark Johnson went out with them. He's one of our board members, and Mark built this extension, which is to be an office and a shower room, not in the same room. I think probably there'll be a wall between, but there we go. That's the old one, and that's the new one. So that was part of the project that they did. This was them working with the local lads, and also with two of the young men who took out with them, laying the floor, laying the foundations. I think these have been taken with a cell phone, that's why they're a wee bit blurred. That's some of the lads who were helping on the project. So it all got finished, and the cracking was fixed. They held up the corner of the building with jacks, and then poured new foundations into it. Now, Tringello School is a school which there are three Christian schools in Zambia, which we would call mission schools. And this is one which is in the middle of Zambia. Our children went for this as a secondary school, and it had a critical problem. We'd never been asked to help to build a new assembly hall and kitchens up. But actually, a more urgent situation arose where they had water problems, water purity problems. And so we sent Paul Dodds out to try and help with that. Paul is, I said, he worked in India for many years. And you know, the thing is that he's had a lot of experience on water systems, so for a project like this, it makes it very useful. This is the headmaster, Harold Ray, and his wife Mary, and this young couple are from Glasgow, and they've gone out. That's actually the daughter of this couple, and they're teaching. So I was with them for lunch last I was looking at the project. But basically, the kitchens were poor. There was, just build up of dirt and all the rest of it. So they wanted to build an extension to the kitchen, and this is the walls going up and the roof going on, the tiling, and that's the end result from the outside. And so Paul was working at 8 o'clock, but he only had about 2 to 3 weeks, but he was trying to advise on the filtration system for the water, as well as doing the actual kitchens themselves. So one of the issues, I mean, it's not to gross you out, but one of the issues was the cookers were against a back wall and they weren't being cleaned behind them, so he found all kinds of wildlife there. So that's why they needed to try and check their kitchen when you go home. So what he did was, I don't know if you can see it, you might see this in the next picture, but he made a kind of island in the middle with up on legs, so that, yeah, there's the island, you see that, so the cookers now will go both sides of that island, and then you can get a sweeping brush around the back to clean the thing out. So, they were very happy with what he did there. And that's it, almost when it's finished. And he also made a sluice down the middle of the kitchen, so all this could be swapped out. And the other design feature he added was this window, because the lady who was working in the office, the administrator, she couldn't see what was happening in the kitchen. So now that there's no hiding because there's windows open looking right into the kitchen, so they also installed pressure filter systems, if that means anything to you, so that the water could be properly treated that's going in. This was one of the original systems which had been bypassed, and what it was, this is a huge tank, and this would be used as a settling tank for the water, and then it would be going to what's called a slow filtration system, which is sand, and the water would trickle through the sand. The algae builds up on top of the sand, and that helps to purify the water, but it's a slow process, and the amount of water they're using at school, they didn't have the luxury of having a slow process. Neither can you add chlorine, because chlorine takes 5 days to work. So they actually needed something that was going to give a lot of water quickly with a, you know, with good purity. So that's why they ended up with a filtration system, which was going to pressure filtration system. If that's not in your field, sorry, I'm just telling you a few things. Uganda. Now this was a project which nearly didn't happen. We were asked by MAF, Mission Aviation Fellowship, if we would please help them with their aircraft hangar. Now if you're familiar with MAF, they had been working in Congo, but because of the troubles in Democratic Republic of Congo, they were put out, or they felt it was better to withdraw. So they are now based not far from Kampala, and they travel into Congo, they travel into through Uganda, and they also do Burundi as well. So it's quite a strategic work. And what they wanted to do was, because they weren't getting good power supply, it was hindering their operations. So I was needing some electrical engineers to try and go there and set up the power supply. So this is the warehouse or the aircraft hangar that they have. They have 5 planes using this aircraft hangar. And this would be it from the inside. So the project was a bit vague, but it involved putting in security lighting, it involved setting up solar power, a generator, extractor fans for the workshop, and so on. Now, I managed to get some volunteers together for this. Tim Whitmore, his mom and dad are here. Tim was, I was very delighted when Tim said he would do a project for us, because Tim's an electrical engineer. That's extractor system. It's not as big as I thought it was when we were talking about it. But so they set up and they installed these. Yeah, Tim sitting up there on top of the scaffolding. They installed these lighting systems inside, LED lighting. And this is Frank. Now Frank is an amazing guy. He's a Hungarian, but he speaks with a Lancashire accent. Just amazing guy. And he has his own electrical engineering company, but he has a hobby, which is keeping pigs. And he lives on a small farm, and he's he said, "Oh, I just love my pigs." I'm not going to try and do his accent. "I just love my pigs." And he says at night he goes out there and he scrubs them, you know, with his brush. He loves that. He said, "Oh, they love that, you know." And I said to him, "You're just about ready for the knife." And so his hobby is keeping pigs and geese. But anyway, we're very fortunate. He came to work with us on this project. And it was all to do with power loading on cables, and it was to do with scheduling of loads and so on. So he and Tim were the guys for that. This is Tim up there with one of the security lights. And I think it was an exciting time for him. He enjoyed the local food. I don't think Frank was so enamored, but he enjoyed it. And so they had a very successful time. In fact, the MAF people called them the A-team. And the reason was because they got through all the jobs so fast. They kept on saying, "Okay, what can we do now? What can we do?" So this is the solar system. And the idea is these systems integrate the town supply, and the generator supply, and the solar supply. So when one is finished, the other one kicks in. So that's our solar system going up with all the new, you'll see the supports and so on. And you'll notice, if you're into electrical things, you'll notice that this is slightly hazardous down here, because you've got live terminals, and Frank was a bit stuck because he's a professional. Now he's looking at this and he's thinking, well, I'm almost finished, we're about to go home, I can't leave, you know, live bolts there on the wall, so what can I do to fix them? So he found a plastic container and he cut the end off it and he screwed it on, and there we have a perfect cover for his insulated cover for his electric cables. So this is Paul doing the generator side, and you know the electronics will be such that if one supply goes down, the other one kicks in. And just as they were leaving, they managed to get all systems, in fact the whole warehouse working, aircraft hangar working on solar power. So it was a job well worth doing, and that's the lights on with the aircraft in so they can do work on it, and we've got a good team there. This is the equator, Frank and Co at the equator for their day off. We do allow them a day off at the end of their project. Now this is the last project I'm going to show you just now. I think some of you may have heard of Wesley Downs, and he has the Northwest Renewal Project in Stockport. And their challenge was that they wanted to have help to renovate the toilets and the kitchens. So we have some volunteers who came forward for that. And this is some of the guys, Lee Jennings and Dennis Cooper. And so they were working there. They were pulling off the insides of the old toilets, demolishing them, putting up new doorways. And partition work, and so it went on. This is a tea break. This is taking out the old toilets. This is the new toilets when they've been done, and more. This is a partition work when it's up. This is the kitchen now that it's finished and it's now in use. This is we've got this other room which is a little tea shop. And it's where they also have books on display for Christian books for sale. So again, this was something that was strategic. It doesn't have to be abroad, it can also be within the UK. In fact, not everybody wants to go abroad, you know, not everybody wants to, you know, go to the far place, certainly not everyone wants to go to Africa. But, you know, people are interested to get involved in certain strategic works within the country. So that's the team that we had working there in Stockport. Now this is just a rundown of some of the jobs that we have for the next few weeks and months. This one here is a Bible school in Belgium, and because we have finished the project last year doing the kitchens and the lecture halls, they wanted us to do the entrance lobby of the Bible school. It has to be done during holiday time because it's in the main thoroughfare of the college. We have this one here in Nogent, and it's just outside Paris. Again, it's a Bible school, and it's to do with access for wheelchairs. So we've done our project in the toilets, so now to make them larger, now we're putting in a platform so that they can put in a lift for wheelchairs, waiting for planning permission for that. This is in Blantyre. Jonathan and Ruth Newell were there for some years, and they have retired from Malawi, but they bought a piece of land. It's in the name of a trust, and they were praying for missionaries to come and take their place, and nobody came. But the Lord answered, and an Indian couple have come, and they've joined the work there, Ananda and Grace, and so we're working with them to try and get a new building up. And again, I was just saying to the folks tonight at the table, it's another case where there's not a huge amount of funds behind this project. But what happened was, last week I was in the office, somebody phoned up and said, my family would like to support our project, have you got anything in mind? And I said, well, sure, I've got something in Blantyre if you're interested. And so he's taken away details and he'll be looking at it. But it's a strategic work because they don't have a building to gather in. They would like to see training, which is most important. And so they want to have a building which can they use partly for Bible school work and partly for the assembly work on Sundays. So we're looking at various designs just now with a view to forwarding them for planning. So June, July time, we want to be digging foundations for that. I don't think we'll do too much more than get a floor slab down this year, Lord willing. But if you're interested in that project and getting going out there to help, it would be nice to hear from you. And Blacktown is a nice place to be. Kittredge School I've told about. Also in Ayrshire we have a rehab centre, request to help with a rehab centre in Ayrshire, and we're still waiting to get final confirmation as to where that has to be, and then we'll try and get some publicity out there for people to be involved. Sarawi, now this is the project down with Jim Ivy Knight. I was down there last year. I honestly thought I'd put some pictures in about that, but they have this Sunday school shelter for 1,200 people they want to have made, which is a big surface area. So just now we're talking with some structural engineers to try and get the right size for that roof, the right kind of structure, because obviously they're for seating 1,200 people for conference times, for Sunday school every week. It has to be something that is very safe, especially when you get high rainfall there and very heavy winds coming through. So these are our job lists just now for the balance of this year. So please pray about that. We need volunteers. We need most particularly project managers, because it's good to use local labour and things, but we need to have people who understand the various disciplines involved and can help with getting people working together and making sure schedules are kept and so on. So these are our needs, and just want to thank you for your interest. I hope it's not been too technical. It's not probably the best thanks, of course. You don't want to end up too technical, but you do want to let people know of the type of challenges that you're facing. So let's give thanks now for the food and conclude our service in prayer.